Thank you. I would like to thank Bill once more for all his inspiration and support over all the years and for all the good times that we've had working on problems, one-to-one resonance, and recently Tanars. And thanks for the organizers for inviting me. That's really, I appreciate that very much. What I will talk about is this Tanars and mixed mode oscillations. This is something that I've been working on for about a year. Now it's joint work with Martin Wechselberger and Morten Bruns. Let me talk about Tanar solutions. Let me see if I can figure out how to use a pointer. Well, one or the other, I don't care. This one's fine. So this is sort of a very heuristic slide, right? So what we know is in slow-fast systems, we have attracting slow manifolds, and Fenichel theory makes a point out of saying that they are locally invariant. They are not necessarily invariant forever, right? So sometimes, as you probably have seen in many contexts, there is an end to the slow drift, right, along the slow manifold. And then everything has to, almost all trajectories have to follow fast directions. So the point about Tanars is they actually cross over to a repelling slow manifold, which is, of course, also invariant. But since it's repelling, it's not so likely to be in there. Okay, and in some sense, you can imagine that Tanar solutions play the role of saddle points in chaotic dynamics. So there are some interesting phenomena that I have not yet really tabulated completely, but mixed mode oscillations is something that we've been thinking about. Well, people in Vienna were thinking about it. I've only been thinking about it for a year. I have been thinking about it. Now, this localization problem is something completely new, and I'm just beginning to think about it, and I have not yet figured it out, but it has to do with the presence of Tanars. So a few words about mixed mode oscillations. These are concatenation of smaller oscillations and relaxation oscillations. So these are relatively small oscillations coming from a Hopf bifurcation, and this is a typical relaxation oscillation. I was talking to John Guggenheimer 2 days ago, and he said to me, you know, bursters are also a kind of mixed mode solutions, right? But this is not like a burster, right? Both types of oscillations are actually slow. Here's an example where you can recognize the first part is van der Pol in some form, some scaling of it. And that used to be a parameter. Now it has been replaced by another slow variable. So this is the kind of prototypical system where one can see this. Now I included this slide about references, right? I don't want to, and I still forgot to delete one of the columns. I deleted one, but not the other one. So there are two types of references. In fact, about Tanar explosion and so on, one could generate pages and pages, but this is not a good idea, right? So the first part is about Tanars, and first of all, there is this more classical reference to Eric Benoit that John Guggenheimer mentioned. And then there is a very recent paper of Martin Wechselberger. And then there is the also a paper by Guggenheim and Heiduck that I was aware of before, but right now John explained to me that it actually has to do with the problem that I'm talking about. And then there is this paper of Milik and Smolyan that you know, people who know the Vienna work always go back to. That's a paper where they analyzed mainly numerically the mixed mode oscillations for the autocatalator system, which is a sort of very simple non-existing chemical equation. And they also were planning to apply it to some more concrete, more real problems, but unfortunately the there was no explicit separation of timescales, so they didn't quite know how to do it. Then very recently there is a paper of Jeff Molis, also about a chemical oscillator, and that's where he found mixed-mode oscillations, but he didn't really analyze them very much. He just mentioned that they are there, right? So it's an example. And then that last paper is also an example. It's very interesting, but I don't think I have the time to talk about it, right? So here is a slide about singular perturbation theory. On the left we have the slow equation, on the right we have the fast equation. I never know which one is which, so I might have messed up the terminology. Then what is important is we go from the equation on the left or on the right, on that side, on the west side, to this one by rescaling time. And the time rescaling, of course, doesn't work for epsilon equal to zero, but for epsilon positive is fine. And the two equations, two time scalings, give us the approximations. This is a so-called reduced equation, and this is a Leroyer equation, right? And this set is called the critical manifold. Okay, here you cannot fix typos. I cannot write on the screen. And for the other problem, S0 is the phase space. So on the next slide, I have actually a picture. That picture on the other side, right? Let me go over to here. This here is the critical manifold. And the flow of the reduced problem is only defined on the critical manifold. And it shows how things would limit on that time scale. This is the flow in the layer problem is defined in the whole space, but the y equal to constant slices are invariant, right? So then there is this perturbation result of Fenichel that in the presence of normal hyperbolicity, this kind of perturbs to this kind of problem, right? There is an invariant manifold nearby the order epsilon away from the critical manifold. It's called slow manifold, and it attracts things. Okay, so here is an explanation of relaxation oscillation, right? So this is the thing that I was talking about in the beginning, right? Here is a picture where we have a critical manifold which has a fold, right? This is a I just realized that the arrows here are also, I have already fixed those arrows before, but they are not quite right. There should be one arrow here and one arrow there. So the flow on the reduced manifold, the reduced flow actually has a singularity at the origin, right? So the slow manifold here can no longer follow the slow direction. It continues along the fast direction, right? And then on this picture is actually correct around here. You can see the two arrows. This is a singularity. I'll explain that a little better in a minute. So this is a relaxation oscillation. The orbit comes by the fold point, has to follow the fast direction, comes to another sheet of the slow manifold. Another branch of the slow manifold goes to another fold, and so on, right? And that gives us a picture of a relaxation oscillation. Okay, now comes the part of the talk is sort of new research to me, systems with two slow variables, right? So what happens now is the, in this context at least, is that the critical manifold is a parabolic cylinder, right? It's given by in this case, y equals x squared, right? So it's just the parabola translated along the z direction, right? And there is a fold line, okay? Now we can get the reduced equation. You can imagine putting the epsilon in the first equation. Epsilon x dot is equal to minus y plus x squared. Set epsilon equal to 0. And that gives you y equals x squared, right? Okay, well, it's not good to try to solve for y, but you can use x as the parametrizing variable, and you get this system of equations, right? Here in this context, we have eliminated the y variable, right? But there's still the idea of the fold line, and it has a set of singularities. So let's see if we have a picture. Let's see how much this picture explains this situation. This here is the fold line. Here there is a trajectory on the critical manifold. That's the trajectory of the reduced equation. It comes to the fold line and ceases to exist, right? It's a singularity of the reduced problem. So then the next approximation to the trajectory is a so-called critical fiber, right? We can go along this and get to another, close to another branch of the, an attracting branch of the critical manifold, right? So this corresponds to the situation where this G1 at the fold point is non-zero, right? Well, you can see there is a singularity there, right? There is no way a solution is getting past that, right? And that's the typical situation. Well, typical, of course, the fold line in this case is a curve, right? So if we go along this curve, we can, in a system without a variation of parameter, get points where actually this is violated. And these points are called folded singularities. And they are very interesting. They come up in Forst van der Poel and folded saddles. And John Guggenheimer spent some time explaining how folded saddles work. In this mixed modes situations, and kind of generally, folded modes are very interesting, and this is one of the things that I would like to convince you of in this talk. Okay, so here's an example of a system with a folded node. Again, to this here, I have already explained, right? I set epsilon equal to 0. That gives me y equals x squared. Differentiate with respect to time. And I get this system on the reduced manifold. Okay, now what happens is this desingularization trick, which is completely trivial, but very important to understand how that works. So what we do is we rescale the time by this factor 2x, and then we just cancel in the first equation, right? So the 2x has traveled from here to there. Now this equation will have the same trajectory, right? It's a just a rescaling of time. Of course, what we have to keep in mind is on both sides of the fold line, the time parameterization, we have to watch the time parameterization, right? So where the factor was positive, time parameterization stays the same. On the other side, we have to change the arrow, right? So our phase portraits, we can draw phase portraits for this equation and then appropriately change the arrows. On the fold line, it doesn't really mean anything. Away from the fold line, it gives us all the information that we need. So let's look at what's on the next slide. This is the set of phase portraits for the folded node. The picture A is the familiar picture of a folded, of a node, right? It's not folded, it's just a node, right? However, on this side, what I have done is I have reversed at least some of the arrows, hopefully successfully, right? So you can see that there is a trajectory that goes through like this, there is a trajectory that goes through like that. I could have had an arrow here. It would be very important to see that here there is actually a singularity. There is one over there, right? And this point is similar to the time of fold point that I was drawing all the time, right? So if I think of this side for a negative axis as the attracting, modeling my attracting branch of the critical manifold, then trajectories that come this way will jump and follow the critical fiber, will go over to the other sheet, whereas the trajectories that are in this side, right, they will stay away from the fold because the dynamics is away from the fold. They tend to they get attracted, of course, exponentially attracted to this, okay, and they all kind of want to go over to the repelling part of the slow manifold. Yes, of course.
In the picture on the right,
yes,
you have the double zero eigenvalue,
right? No. There is no equilibrium in that picture. There is no. This is a system with singularity, right? So, in order to see that system, you have to put a 2x in front of the x dot, right? So, there is a singularity on the origin, right? No. There is never a fixed point. This is an artificial picture, right? This picture has been obtained by rescaling the time. That means we have created the fixed point here, and we have created a regular flow over these lines. Okay, before these lines were all singularities, right, where solutions did not continue, right? And about this point, we did not know, right? And in this picture, we can say we can make some sense out of saying that there is a trajectory that goes from one side to the other, and there is another trajectory that goes from this side to that side, right? But in fact, when you return to the original time scaling, there is no fixed point anymore.
I look at that picture on the right. You've got this stuff coming in, and then it seems like it's coming down. There's nothing to pull it in. It seems like from the dynamics. At least there's a fixed or less or a singularity there, but it doesn't look like there's anything to pull it in from the dynamics.
From what?
Well, we've got this line going out like so. Do you think that would just...
Yeah? This? This is a two-dimensional picture.
Yeah, so, but there is something weird because, as you pointed out, you have to reflect the direction. You draw the node picture, and then you have to reflect the direction in the z-axis, when x goes to minus x. You quite reflect the direction of arrows.
That's right.
And so it looks like you have arrows pointing in towards the z-axis from the left, above the x-axis.
Yes. It's not a fixed point. No, it's a singularity. Right? It's like what we see in the first course of...
Well, you go in there, but it takes
takes finite time and there is no continuation of the solution. Yes. Yeah. This one here, yeah.
Right there. There should be an arrow pointing out.
Yeah. So the x-axis, the z-axis, x equals 0, is filled with singular points.
Correct, yes, 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 yes. Yeah, I mean, there is a... Right. That's right, yes, yes, yes. However, these... I mean, you can try to convince yourself, this picture is completely standard, right? This is just a linear picture. Then you can try to convince yourself that this is exactly what happens. Actually, what happens when you do the time rescaling back, right? But I mean, what all I'm doing is I am rescaling the time, right? So I can, okay, we can take this invariant line, right, this sort of straight line solution, and apply the time rescaling, and we can actually put together a trajectory which is you know, at least away from the singularity, clearly a solution of that system previously, and it does not stop at zero, it just goes through. Right? So it is a pretty confusing picture, I know, so I'm also out of my time this way, but here, what I would like to talk about is a what actually happens near a folded node, right? There are the two slow manifolds that come from Fanishall theory. That is, this one is strongly attracting, this one is repelling, right? And then, in the folded node case, there are two Carnot solutions, the two so-called primary Carnot solutions that correspond to those funny solutions that were going through zero, right? One corresponding to the strong direction, which in my case was horizontal, and the other one corresponding to the weak direction, which in my case was the one on the angle, 45-degree angle, right? And in the actual life, right, for epsilon greater than zero, what happens is the blue Carnot is above the green Carnot. Blue is strong, green is weak. And then on top of that, depending on this number, depending on the ratio of the eigenvalues at the node, there is a rotation, there are the secondary Carnots, right? And what the secondary Carnots do is they start out in SA, as they come here, so they come out of the region of Fanishall theory, right, where Fanishall theory does not want to work anymore, right? And they kind of start feeling the oscillation that comes from going back and forth between the two slow manifolds, right? And of course now the whether the sort of oscillation is contracting or repelling is sort of a function of whether you spent more time closer to this or closer to that, right? So what happens if you if the trajectory drifts in that direction, it actually first goes closer to the weak Carnot, and then it goes away from it, right? And then since it is a Carnot, secondary Carnot, then the red one, I draw it as something that actually is contained in SR. Okay, since here's this picture again, but the reason I put this picture is a little bigger, so maybe you can see a little better. I apologize for the pictures, I'm not an artist. So if you cannot, well, if you can give me suggestions how to improve those pictures, I would be really appreciate it. So, what I'm saying here is what happens to all the trajectories, right? This is known. This one can, I guess, figure out from Martin Wechselberger's paper. I don't think that it's really optimal the way these things are proved at this point. So there's still maybe some work on that. So any trajectory will that is in left, so to speak, or to the some okay, on this side of the strong Carnot, which is the green orbit, is going to be attracted to this and then start rotating around it and will come out, right? Now, it may come out so that it follows the relaxation path, or it may go along this Carnot, or it sometimes may go along that Carnot, right? So these are the three possibilities of leaving the neighborhood. It is actually quite complicated. Okay, and it is a lot of work to prove it, and as I said, it is not quite done yet. Now the question is, what happens with the global problem? And I think I'll be happy if I can get through this slide, so then I have already explained to you something that happens, right? So this is a situation like in the van der Pol equation with an S-shaped parabolic cylinder a S-curve cross the line, right? And here are the two primary canards, the weak and the strong, right? So if we take a singular trajectory, so this is our singular picture, right? This is supposed to be for epsilon equal to zero. We go along the critical fiber, and then we go back on this critical manifold, and we jump over here. If we land in between, then this is our return mechanism that leads to mixed mode oscillations, right? We have to come into this region, we have to spiral around, then we jump over again, and we make one big oscillation and a number of small ones, right? So this is kind of the simplest situation. Now, there are some situations where you can actually get many large oscillations and then some small ones. This people relate this to a bimodal map type of picture. And that happens when it's a little bit more subtle what happens there. But this essentially happens after this by some motion of parameter has crossed to the other side. But still there is some attractivity that you can be reinjected into that region. What I want to also mention is a problem called folded saddle node. Okay, so here I have the set of reduced problem bifurcation diagrams for that. Here we can see a folded node case, and this is the folded saddle case with some additional structure, and that's the mu equal to zero situation. You can see that for the reduced problem, there is one trajectory going through, and this trajectory that before was also going through is no longer going through because it actually corresponds to a center manifold, right? So if you do the scaling, then you don't get the scaling so that things go through. So this in some sense is a situation similar to canard explosion, right? Because what happens here is you get a stable fixed point, right? And then after the bifurcation, this is a saddle point on the unstable branch, right? And something must have happened in the meantime, right? However, folded saddle node is just a part of the picture, and it is, in some sense, easier to analyze. In another sense, it is difficult to see the transition between folded node and folded saddle node, and folded node is the one that is important. But I would like to say a few words about this. I see that I'm quickly running out of time. What happens in the folded saddle node, if you go back to this picture, when I have this, right, I don't really have such a good candidate for the weak canard, right? The strong canard, the singular strong canard is still there, right? By perturbation of this, I will get the strong canard that goes through. But the weak canard, there is no good candidate, so it isn't really there. It is there in some limiting sense, but it is not so easy to... I haven't really looked for it. I'm not so focused on finding it. But at any rate, what happens is this is a typical picture of a trajectory, right? Again, starting on the attracting sheet of this little manifold, one is attracted to the what was left of the we kanar, it becomes some kind of an invariant manifold, and the trajectory spirals around, and then it actually comes close to the strong kanar, and it may go over this way, or it may actually travel much higher up the strong kanar and go either way, right? So what I would like to see a few words about is the sort of analysis that we can do with this. We pick a section delta. There may be some problems with the section around here where there is that oscillation. So I'm afraid that some of those oscillations might be tangent to the plane. But even if it is so, I have a way to fix it. So that's not a big problem, right? So now what I look at is here, this picture I marked by gamma, the strong kanar. This is its intersection with the unstable sheet. Now, if something is in the attractor of my map, then and it is on that of my vector field rather, and it is on that close to SR, then it has to be close to the strong kanar, because everything goes along the strong kanar. Well, I started 5 minutes late. Okay, well, anyway. And then we have to look at the projection of the strong kanar onto this, and the way it flows onto the fold line. And then when we project that over to, I don't have many more slides. When we project that over to here, then this is the approximation of the attractor, right? So I have, at least for this folded saddle node case, I have a good approximation of my attractor. Now, there is also another important curve, that's that curve L3, okay? And if I am on this side of the curve in the section, then I'm going to follow the relaxation. And if I'm on that side of the curve, then I follow that funneling part, right? So that curve is very important. It's actually in the top part, where most of it is close to the projection of the strong canar on the stable side to the section, right? And of course, that's what is important now is when there is a an intersection between the this is a part of the attractor or approximation of the attractor, and that's that curve that was that's the approximation to the curve, that's the curve that delineates whether one goes along the relaxation route above it and or below small oscillations, right? Now when the approximation of the attractor crosses that curve, then we have a steep peak in the return map, right? So this is one possibility of the return map, reduce the return map to that curve that I showed that approximates the attractor, right? In this case, you will just have a relaxation oscillation that follows, corresponds to a fixed point there. Yeah, and this is the last one, okay? So here we have two intersections and a bimodal map, right? So this is just my conclusion slide, which says canar-induced mixed mode oscillations happen in a large parameter region, regime, right? So for people who know that about canar explosions and say canars are just a transitory fleeting phenomenon, you can find this very robustly, right? It's not anything even of a epsilon or lambda size, right? It's really very big. And then this, there are infinitely many canar explosions. Every time a periodic orbit of some type goes through the canar, you have a canar explosion. And the last is that this approach is good. I don't know about non-standard analysis. Asymptotic expansions probably don't work very well because you cannot expand the secondary canaries. So Thank you. Sorry for going over time.